Hello, welcome to another episode of The High Ground, powered by Premier Companies. Ryan, how are you today?
Wonderful as always.
Always are.
I don't even know why you asked me.
I know. We have one returning guest, and he brought his boss with him. Well, maybe not the boss, but is he your boss?
He's my boss.
Okay, yeah. And that takes a lot of nerve to come on the high ground.
Last time he was here, and probably why his boss came on this time.
Ooh, yeah, they never thought of that.
Hard to tell what he said last time.
Yeah, that's what got me right there.
That happens.
We'll do introductions, and then nobody misses it. I don't care if he is the boss. Nobody misses the question of the day. So with us today is Ryan Babb, and Ryan's a facility manager over Little York and Harnd, Kentucky.
Yep, that's right.
Yep. For United Producers Incorporated. And then Andy Pennick came over from, where do you live, Ohio?
I live in Lebanon, Ohio.
Oh, that's not too far.
Not
just
terrible.
North of Cincinnati.
Yep.
And you're the Senior Marketing Director.
Yes, sir.
For United Producers.
Absolutely.
But most importantly, the question of the day.
Oh, boy.
You want Ryan to go first? This ought to be interesting.
This ought to be sort of revealing for all of us here.
I can't wait to hear it.
Yeah, Andy wants to hear it, too. So the question of the day is, how did I word that? Have you ever, tell us about a time when you tried to talk your way out of a speeding ticket, and did it work?
So, you're going to be let down about this, but I'm going to find some wood here to knock on. But anyways, I've only had one speeding ticket that I am aware of in
so
my whole life.
So it didn't work.
And, you know, I tell you where it was from. It was kind of the curse on the Kentucky market, I think, because I was down there visiting one day. And this was 15, 20 years ago. And there's a little town you go through called Midway, Kentucky. And it's in the middle of Irvington, Kentucky and Brandenburg, Kentucky. And I was going through there and just traveling along, going 50 miles an hour. All of a sudden, here comes a cop after me. And I was like, what did I do? I'm just driving along through here. And so I pull off, and the farmer's there, his little barn lot there, and cop pulls in. You know how fast you're going? I was like, yeah, I was going 50 miles an hour. Like, I'm on a highway, you know? And he's like, you're over the speed limit. And I was like, I don't know what you're talking about. And he's like, yeah, there's a speed limit. It's 30 miles an hour. You're 20 miles over. I was like, oh. I said, I've been driving through here for years, and I've never even noticed the speed limit. And he goes, well, maybe now you'll start paying attention because I'm writing you a ticket. I'm like, but I'm from Indiana. And he's like,
even
worse.
I don't
care where you're from.
That's even worse.
You're still getting it.
You know, it's just like, and he's like, well, he was like, and like I say, I remember Silas was little, so it's got to be 10, 15 years ago. But anyways, I was like, oh, great. You know, now I got to pay this ticket. And so, like, first thing you do is you call a buddy somewhere and be like, hey, can you get me out of this ticket?
How do I get out?
You know, and they're like, yeah, maybe if you're from Kentucky, but if you're from Indiana, you're done. So, yeah, that's my story on the speed
So it did stick.
Yeah, it stuck, and
foreigner.
I paid it. Yeah, I paid it.
Okay.
Yeah. Nice.
Well, Andy, can you do a better story than that?
No, I think I can top it. So it's probably 6 years ago, we were heading up north to Cedar Point. So we had the whole family, and we were meeting some friends of ours out of Grand Rapids, Michigan, and we had had the whole weekend. It was great. Coming back, this was probably 3 o'clock in the afternoon. All the kids and the wife was asleep. So I hammered down, coming across the middle of Ohio there. And I was probably doing well over the speed limit at that point.
Especially when everybody's asleep. You
can make time. That's all I was concerned about. So the odds were not stacking up for me. There was a state trooper coming the other way. I'm like, he's got me now. So
if they got to turn around to get you, they're bringing a ticket with them.
Yep. Well, I just kept on going. He finally caught up to me and pulled over, knew it was coming. He walked up to the window and he said, can you explain why you were going so fast? And I said, well, sir, family was asleep. We're coming back from vacation. And he goes, well, do you know how fast you were going? And I said, well, probably well over 90.
Holy crap.
Yeah. And
he said, no, 78. You're like,
yeah.
I got you at 78.
Oh, shoot.
Yep. So at that point, you know, I had my concealed carry, and I looked down, and I always kept my pistol right by my side there, and I forgot it was there. Well, that resulted in him escorting me out of the vehicle.
No way.
Absolutely, because I didn't, you know, warn him. And so went back and sat in his car, and my wife's freaking out at this point, you know. Kids are still asleep. And I just so happened to run on our volunteer fire department. So when he ran my plates after I was back in the car, he could see that because my plate was tied to the county that I worked in. And he looked back at me and he goes, well, you don't have a long, you know, a big record of tickets and, you know, you run for the fire department. And I said, well, I said, how's this going to end? He goes, well, I'm going to let you off with a warning.
Wow.
And, so we ended up talking about, he was a fireman as well. So we ended up kind of coming together on a few things. And I said, I'll slow her down.
Yeah.
That was it.
That is unusual. Make it all the way to the back seat.
And then still get out of the ticket.
Yeah. Was your front seat or back seat?
Back seat.
Oh, that's bad. That's there's nothing good.
Yeah.
No, you don't get to sit back there all the time.
No.
Not for fun.
No.
Not for fun.
Don't even take a ride if they're offering
yep.
it.
Yeah. Yep.
Ryan?
So mine's similar to that, actually, from the concealed carry standpoint. So I got pulled over for speeding, and I don't know how far I'd gone with him behind me because I just – I didn't look. I mean, in his, so I, when I finally see him, I pulled over immediately. And he walks up to the truck window, and I come on with the dad. And he said, can I see your license registration? And I said, well, first of all, I think you ought to know. I said, there's a loaded pistol, like, right. I kept my hands way up. I was like, it's right there. I said, what's your advice for that? He said, you plan to leave it where it sits right now? I said, yeah, that's the plan. He said, that it can stay right there. He said, if you have intention of moving it, he said, then we're gonna change this up a little bit. But he didn't end up writing me a ticket, but he had followed me substantial distance. He said, he's like, I didn't bump my sirens, but he said, I was getting to that point. I thought, surely he's just going to look up at some point in time, see, but I did not. So I didn't get a ticket that time. I've only had one speeding ticket in my entire life, but I've got the little magic box that I keep underneath my rearview mirror to tell me when there's someone in the vicinity.
That's almost a guaranteed ticket, though. They see that when they come.
Well,
up there,
No. Not always. I don't. I think it's mixed on whether or not it's legal or not.
Heck, but anymore, Google will tell you where they're at.
Yeah. Or, yeah, it pops up, speed check on whatever. But yeah, so I. Right. But yeah, I didn't. I got out of that one. But I was more worried about the pistol at that point. So he was cool with it.
I've got a few of them. One of them, I'll go way back in time, back when there was a Terra plant. Down there, and I was with Michael down there at the Terra plant, and I was trying to help out one day, so I drove the delivery truck, and I had a Class B CDL at that time, and so I was driving the delivery truck, so I was the last one out. Everybody else was busy, so I was like, I'll take it. It's not going too far. I was coming back through Scottsburg with a tandem box truck, and the DOT lady pulled me over, or tried to. I didn't want to stop in town. I thought that was ridiculous. I could see her back there with the lights on, but I was like, well, it'll widen up about where that Walmart was. So it'll widen up here. So I'm driving along and she's still got the lights on. She'd come out and I'd wave. So I got pulled over up there and
she got happier by the mile.
It gets worse. Yeah. So she comes up there and she goes, why didn't you pull over? I was like, well, I was trying to outrun you. Not funny.
Yeah.
She didn't take that well.
She goes, I need your driver's license. And there's a medical in your medical sheet. And I was like, well, here's my driver's license. I was like, but you mean that physical? And she goes, yeah, I need the papers. And I was like, well, you don't expect me to carry those around all the time, do you? And she goes,
what the paper says.
That's what the paper says. And so I'm like, oh. I was like, well, I'm not really a real truck driver. I'm just helping out today. And she goes, don't say that to a DOT person. And she goes, well, how far are you going? I was like, I'm just going to Salem. And she goes, you get there and don't get behind the wheel of a truck again until you know what you're doing.
Oh, wow.
I thought it was an excellent
She didn't give me a ticket.
She did not give me a ticket.
No ticket.
Nope.
All of those infractions and you didn't get a ticket.
Nope.
You must be a real charmer.
Because I laid black marks when I stopped because there was a tag axle, and it wasn't right.
Yeah.
It was too much weight down or something.
You might win the award.
Yeah.
Yeah, that might be.
I've got others, but anyway.
Yeah. Man.
Well, this is our livestock. We're talking livestock today.
I didn't know we were still raising cattle. It's been so long since he's been on here. Yeah. I thought we'd sold them all when the price got high and there was no more left. So.
Yeah. We hadn't had Sal buy any freezer beef for a long time.
I know. That's when it gets it's close to home.
Well, just wait.
So, Andy, Ryan, so what's going on in the markets today?
Well, I'll start off. I mean, this market is just exceptional for a beef producer right now. We got on here, I was talking with Ryan before this started, and I said, you remember when I told Sal that his freezer piece was too cheap and all this here other stuff? And he kind of looked at me and thinking, yeah, you got me. Well, guess what? I would really get you right now. So those prices are very cheap compared to what you paid a year and a half ago. Yes, sir.
No, you.
The market's on the climb. Them fat steers right now, we're pushing. I would say we'd top out today at some of our markets over towards Vincennes area around that $2 area.
I got on your website and looked.
Yeah, it's amazing. Yesterday we had some cattle. We had a holiday. We're recording after Memorial Day here. But, yesterday we had a market there at Little York. And, we hit, six or seven fat cattle that came in for the sale, which was a low number. But with the holiday and all that stuff that came through. Kind of understandable, but even our best one bring 188 yesterday or something like that. So it's like, these things are getting high. Jeez. Six weight steers, wing vaccinated, full shots, $3 and something. Yeah. So, a lot of the 3 and 4 weight steers.
Yeah, they're going for over $4.
Yeah. Yeah. Hitting that $4 plus. So, just amazing on how, I mean, Sal, like I remember back, 5-6 years ago, you'd say, hey, throw me some calves in here.
Yeah.
Just whatever. We're going to feed them out. We're going to ship them out, and we'd probably have $500-$700 a head in them. Baby calves.
Yeah.
Baby calves, beef baby calves right now for $400 to $700 a piece.
We're going to start rustling them again.
Yeah, so
rustling. Yeah. When's the last time we used that word?
So when
cattle prices were this high.
Yeah. I mean, we got to talking the other day. A guy came into Stockyards and he's like, you remember whenever you had to put that tarp over your air conditioner because you didn't want somebody to steal it? I was like, yeah. He goes, now you need to put a padlock on your gate.
Yep.
And it's funny because everybody knows where I live and they know my cattle get out all the time. So anyways, it's nothing uncommon for about 7 o'clock in the evening somebody calling, or 7 in the morning, 7 at night. Hey, you got 3 baby calves.
Hey, you got $2,000 on the road.
yeah. You might want to put those $4,000 calves up, But, I'm afraid that my good neighbors that I do have in the Rosebud area over there wouldn't be maybe so apt to call, maybe so apt to maybe put them on their trailer if they actually knew how much they was worth.
Trying to help you.
Yeah.
Just trying to help
you. I don't know why they'd want to leave.
Yeah, I don't know.
You got a great place there. I know. Why would they leave?
I don't have no idea. I don't have no idea.
I can't. Yeah. What's driving it up?
I think it's just the we always look into the market as far as what's happening, what's going on, and the report that comes out, the USDA report that comes out, the cattle on feed report, stuff like that. And we look at that. We look at the corn prices. Corn prices are cheap. Bean prices are down. So whenever you can feed them cheap, there's more people want to get interested. When corn was $7-$8 there, two or three years ago, why would you want to feed cattle? Why would you want to own any livestock for it if it's going to be that high? So you couldn't really afford to do it. But I think it's a mixture of that and just the fact of, the numbers that, we had some tragic events there in South Dakota. We had like a snowstorm, I think, that came through there, a couple years ago.
That.
And we had, the drought in Texas and Oklahoma. The panhandle down through there, and then we had a major flood somewhere, and then
wildfires
2 years ago there, a year ago. But I think it's just all those things happening, and then whenever we get down and we really study, I used to have 1,000 cows on this ranch, and now I'm sitting here with 500, or and take it local in Indiana. Well, grandpa passed away and we sold the cows, or, so-and-so said, we couldn't afford to keep them anymore. The kids went off to college. We're doing this, we're doing that. The herd dispersals that happen,
burn all of it off and plant corn in it.
That's exactly right. $8 corn gets rid of a lot of pastures.
Never thought about that. Farm, so this could be kind of the tail of a lot of events because it takes a while, right?
It's just a cycle.
Doesn't turn back on. It takes the whole gestation period and the whole thing to come back around.
Yeah.
Yeah, just when you think that, we obviously watch the market pretty close, and when you think it's going to start to trend down or level out, last few weeks it's keeps going up.
Well, that's so, there is some positive there. I mean, that's to show that people are going to – people will not – enough double negatives – eat their steak and their hamburger. Yeah. And, I mean, they're going to have
– and you know, like if you take the average steak companies around you know, your big high-end stuff, your Texas Roadhouses and stuff like that, you know, they're still serving the meat. They're still serving the steaks. And they're selling, and if you walked – you know, there's always a wait. You always have to wait. And you know, here's the thing I challenge people to look at. When you're walking to your table, how many people have a steak on their plate or a burger or something? There's a lot.
There's a lot.
And yeah. So, like, there's people still consuming the product. You know, and you take a fancy high-end restaurant like that. We talked about the pork prices not being very high, like a pork tenderloin, a whole tenderloin for $20 to $25. You know, that would feed a lot of people.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a beef ribeye feeds 15 people. You know, pork loin probably feeds 30 people. So, you know, dollar for dollar, but those high-end restaurants don't have the pork on their menu like they do the different beef options. So, you know, that's something else that you look at as far as, you know, the circulation of from pasture to plate. You know, the big end restaurants are still promoting a lot of beef cattle stuff and less pork stuff because pork's a lot of that is exported out.
Hmm. Yeah, and then I guess, you know, you see some market, obviously inflation. I mean, that's a part of it too. You know, I don't know what percentage goes through all the fast food places, but I was watching on a YouTube news clip and it had the prices of a Big Mac compared to just a few years ago. And I don't think all the cost is driven by the special sauce. I think it's probably the hamburger in there, right?
Yeah.
But just to see how the prices have increased there.
So we know what's got us here. What does the future look like? I mean, you alluded to that you think sometimes it should be trended down, and it's not.
Yep.
So any thoughts on what the future looks like?
No, I mean, you know, really even expanding on what the beef cattle is, you know, as an industry is doing, you know, there's a whole nother segment out there with our beef on dairy cross cows, you know, and if you look at that industry, the thing with that is the consistency, you know, the way that those calves are raised and the way that they're moved through the feedlot system.
It's more like a swine production.
It very, very much so mimics that, right? And I was actually – we've got a gentleman, Clay Fredericks, who heads up our beef on dairy division for producers.
Explain beef on dairy.
So really, you know, crossing a really good beef bull with a Holstein or Jersey – there's multiple specifications you could get into that, but it's a beef cow and a dairy cow cross.
So you're trying to raise the quality of the meat. The meat, of the dairy side.
Yep. Yeah. Yep. Oh. And then within that, you know, with those cattle, you're getting, you know, substantial better marbling. You're getting, you know, as some would call it, a better buttery flavor with your steak.
More fat.
Yep. So a little more fat, but the marbling, you know, side of it is, again, it's consistent. If you break down those carcasses across the board, they're pretty close to identical. You know, we partner with a lot of growers across the United States. You know, we're really international at this point with, you know, who we're shipping to in Canada and some of our producers up there, working with a lot of feedlots out west, just to create that consistent product.
And that's your tie. That's your comparison to the hog industry because the hogs are just, I mean, if they want lean, they're all lean. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's just where they go. The whole entire herd goes that way.
Yep.
So, okay.
Yeah. And on top of the beef on dairy, you know, you got your Holstein cows that, you know, that are your Fair Oaks, for example, you know, they're breeding their cows and then they're using sex semen to make their heifer calves, which are dairy calves. The other stuff, they're using Angus, primarily bulls. Yep. And then the thing also that comes out with that, with the marbling and the stuff, as far as the farmer goes, we got shorter days on feed and they're going to finish more like beef cattle.
Hmm.
So, and here's another thing to it. They're more than 51% black. So now they're certified Angus.
Now they're certified Angus.
So it's a marketing tool that we use, or marketing scheme, however you want to say it, that, you know, that is driving these cattle to be worth more money.
Wow.
So you're still getting, you're still, you know, the best cows that are, you know, if they're on the carousel swinging around every day, they know exactly, you know, E17 cow is producing this much milk. So that's the one we want to get an offspring from. So we're breeding her with a heifer, you know, going to have a heifer pregnancy. And then, you know, the one that's putting out, you know, less production, she's probably going to get a, you know, a Angus bull to promote a steer.
Wow.
You know, so that's what we're kind of getting into. And that's honestly the hottest topic Andy brought up that is in the beef cattle world right now, is this beef on dairy.
Yeah.
It is the hottest thing going as far as production and getting people involved in it right now.
And people are for it.
Yeah.
I mean, they're for it. I mean, yeah. it's not drawing a lot of ire or pushback from folks, I assume.
At this point, we cannot put enough calves in our growers. That's how
the demand
is. We just can't, you know, we're sourcing again all over the United States. You know, there was just a partnership between King Ranch and Cobalt Cattle that just happened a couple months ago, and from their investment side of it, you know, we ship a lot of beef on dairy cows to Cobalt, which is a feeder out west, there's some good, you know, good growth in that market.
Are those feedlots, like, the go back to the pig analogy, I mean, do they fill them all at the same time, just like a pig's barn?
So they want to fill pens.
They cash flow them that way, right? Isn't that the way they try to do that? Well, they space them so they're always...
Well, the cash flow would be rotating. So, like, if you have a let's say, a 30,000-head feedlot unit, there would be so many pens that equal the 30,000. So the pens are based on semi-load. So... If one pen may hold the 50,000-pound load when it's finished, so it may hold, you know, the 37 to 40 steers, or it may hold three loads of equal quality cattle coming in to that pen. So when it's finished, the packer comes through there and they put bids on the pen. So let's say, to break it down smaller, if you have one load in each pen, the packers come through and look at the pens, and if they qualify as being finished ready cattle, then they'll put a bid on that pen.
Wow.
And the biggest number gets the pen. Hmm. Unless they're contracted, like the beef on dairy mostly are.
Yep.
Before they are born, they're contracted out.
Which would be just like the hogs.
Just like the hogs.
Yeah, that's the uniqueness.
The only difference that we see in this is the hog contract goes out farther than the beef contract.
Hmm.
Pretty interesting stuff.
That is pretty interesting. I did not know that.
Yeah, and it's a thing. So, like, we can all sit here and look along the countryside, and we can look back to when every one of us in this room was kids. There was a dairy farm within 5 miles of our house for sure. So now we have to know where that dairy farm is if we wanted to take my kid to the dairy farm. We would have to know where that's at. And we may not know where one of those is at, or not even in the same county. And getting to the point of maybe we have to set aside a certain day to go on vacation to go see the dairy farm, even though we are in the cattle business.
And changing that quality perception of a dairy cow. I mean, that used to be, you get a tough piece of steak, everybody always said, right, that must have been an old spent dairy cow. You know what I mean? Yeah. And that's changed.
Exactly
now.
Right.
Right. Right.
We talk a lifetime. Jeez.
Yeah. You talk about prices, you know, just a couple weeks ago, those beef on dairy crosses, day olds, what we consider day olds, $900, hitting $1,000 up towards Pennsylvania per head, which is unheard of.
Yeah. And about 150 to 80 on a semi-load?
Yep.
Oh, my gosh.
$1,000 a head?
Yep.
150?
150 head of calves.
That's amazing.
Yeah. Yeah.
it's wild.
Yeah, it's something else. But you know, like I say, we push the beef on dairy, but you know, in the beef cattle side of it, it's still a hot market. It's still a promoting thing. There's still lots of people that aren't sold on this that still do it the old way they used to do it, the way the grandpa did it, the way the ranch has always done it, the way the feedlots always did it. You know, and they want the performing calves. another big issue that we're dealing with right now is cattle that are weaned and vaccinated. We talked a little bit about that earlier in the podcast, you know, that's had the shots and, you know, they've been away from their mother for so many days before we sell them. Different things like that. You know, that's a hot topic right now as far as, you know, selling healthy products to the places to where they make more money. The feedlots in the West and stuff. And that takes a lot, you know, like most of the time people think, oh, we'll take them to stockyards. They send them West and then they go into a feedlot. Okay. We missed a whole, we missed the big step. We send them to the stockyards. Someone buys the calves. They probably stay local within a state or two to get preconditioned to go West to handle a different environment, a different climate, a different, you know, atmosphere to adjust to their feeding programs and stuff like that. So, you know, there's a big step in there that we kind of forget. It's not just we're going to take our cow to Little York, Indiana and sell it at the stockyards and then it's going to get on the truck and go to Kansas. You know, there's a little bit of middle picture in there that, you know, with the vaccinating programs and stuff like that, that we're seeing have a huge benefit to us, even though the prices are higher.
So they'll travel. And in a semi can only haul animals so far anyway, right? I mean,
mm-hmm. Yes.
So we have to let them back off and water and everything. So they'll travel to a spot somewhere between to get kind of conditioned, make sure they've got all their vaccinations and they're disease free before they get to the, and that's kind of their control, right, of the diseases and stuff.
Yeah. Yep.
It is amazing the amount of care that is in the livestock industry, right. And how
absolutely
how well the animals are cared for.
Yeah, and that's another thing too. You know, we got into you know, the actual perception of a cow is that it lives out on the grass and it eats the grass, and you know, then we kind of lose track of it after that. You know, like in a mental picture from a person in the city, we see a cow in the field eating grass. You know, like. That cow, you know, I'm not going to say that they're high-performance show cattle that are going to go to the 4-H fairs and stuff like that, but these cattle, anymore, they get a lot of love and attention. Yeah. You know, I mean, there's someone.
You're counting them. They're worth that. Yeah, you know where they are,
yeah, right, yeah.
Other so, than Ryan. Who
yeah,
lets them,
yeah, mine just wander around. Right. They're in Jim Sullivan's cornfield over there. But anyways, you guys are feeding them for me.
So, that was not a premier comment.
Yeah. So we you know, they're just those cattle are out driving, you know, driving the actual producer, the farmer, the backgrounder, whoever, the person that owns the cattle is number one going to take more initiative into making sure those cattle are healthy every day. Yeah. You know, there's a lot of times where I see my cows once a week. Okay. Guess who sees their cows every day now? you know, so like, but you know, that's on a local term. On a big term, these guys have people that's hired to take care of these cattle. There's hospital pens that we put the ones in that maybe ain't doing so great, you know, and that's something that's always been there, but now it's a focus. Like, how are we going to make sure these cattle that cost us $1,600-$1,700 coming into our facility
stay alive
yeah. and live. And you know, there's a lot more that goes into it. So there's more actual care that goes into these animals than what most people think. And along with that, you know, on the buyer side of it, we have a new thing out, you know, and we mentioned it maybe last time, LRP, livestock risk protection. You know, that's huge. Anytime you can have insurance on your livestock, your investment, your mm-hmm. your savings account, your future yeah. goal, whatever, that's huge. And you know, I on that thing you can lock in one head or you can lock in 1,000 head. It doesn't matter. It does cost you a little insurance, a little premium, but what's it worth? You know,
yeah.
what is it worth
with prices the way they are?
Yeah, what's that worth? That's worth nothing. You know,
it's like crop insurance.
It's similar to off the same thing. Mm-hmm. Livestock protection. It actually bases off the United States instead of where our crop is probably based off our county or our region. So it is fluctuating a little bit. But as far as I know, Andy might be able to benefit in here, but as far as I know, there's been a lot of success stories with that.
Oh, yeah. Yep.
To protect the farm.
To protect the farm.
100%.
Yep. And like I say, you can lock that calf in the day it's born. I don't know the exact figures. We didn't have a conference call because of the holiday there Monday, but I was thinking last week on that LRP, you could lock a 600-pound steer in for roughly $1,800 bucks, and maybe an 800-pound steer in for 2 to 2,200,
yep.
roughly. So, wow. I mean, that,
and there's a premium per head. Is that how it's paid? Or
so it's paid off of when you sell. It's just like the crop insurance. Hmm. So, you know, if you sell your 600-pound calf and it brings, you know, $300 and it's $1,800 and then the difference was $1,850, like, is, you know, it's off a national average, it would pay you the actual $50 extra.
Hmm. Yeah. Wow.
And a lot, like, you know, here's another thing that was more familiar with the crop guys. It's easier to go to the bank and get a loan whenever you got protection on the other end. And some of them, let's just face it, some banks won't look at you unless you do have protection on the other end.
Yep.
No, they shouldn't, probably.
And that's right. That's right. They should. So that's where it is becoming a little easier on this livestock protection, you know, to get more people involved in it and maybe taking a chance to buy, you know, some cows that are possibly going to have calves or even, like I say, you don't have to have it on a cow-calf. You can have it on a backgrounding program or anything like that. But that is a big positive thing that's happening in the world. And you can get it. You can get it from anywhere. I would say we promote it at United Producers, but I mean you can get that anywhere. That's not just for somebody that lives in, you know, the Ohio Valley here or whatever, okay. You know. So that's something that if you're listening from long away, you know, looking, if you don't know what livestock risk protection is, that's probably what you want to look at.
Yep.
That's good. Well, you're talking about protecting them that way. So let's transition in out of the market to the actual animal. And here we are just coming off Memorial Day weekend. It's been pretty warm, pretty wet. Pastures are tall, head high. Hay fields haven't been cut yet. So moving into summer and dealing with what comes with summer, bugs and all of that stuff. Give us some care tips. What should we be looking for coming into the... They're trying to pass this question off to each other. Nobody wants to answer this.
I've Sal, seen that.
Sal, do you want to participate? Yeah. Our guests have bowed out.
Yeah, for those watching our podcast, our two guests just gave each other the side eye.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. Who's going
to
take this?
Yeah, one act we were like so anxious to answer, we just didn't want to jump out there all at once.
Right. Ryan, go ahead.
Yeah, so that's one of those things about bringing your boss to the work today. Yeah, right. I got it.
I saw that get delegated.
Yeah, I knew it was going to happen sometime.
I figured that was the direction we were headed, but I wasn't sure.
You know, in all seriousness, the cattle thing, like we said earlier, there's more stuff that goes into this than what you think besides the cow eating grass alongside of the road. So, you know, you mentioned the grass, you know, it got warmer early, the grass grew. You know, one thing we need to worry about right now and this time of year is, you know, as our mineral program. Mineral program is probably the most important thing that you can do in livestock. I don't care what it is, if it's swine, if it's beef, sheep, goats, whatever. The mineral program. So we want a high mag mineral right now, pushing in, like you say, Memorial weekend. We want probably something in there with fly control. You know, that's an option. You can get mineral in so many different ways right now. You know, in any place you go, will have all these options: high mag, fly control, medication in there for, you know, to help maybe with a little foot rot, because we did get a little bit more rain than we have been there lately. Just all these things you can get in this mineral. And you know what? Mineral costs something, but mineral don't cost anything if you feed it like you're supposed to feed it. You know, like people go out and like they'll hear their podcast and they'll be like, oh, I got to track supply and get that mineral today. You know, so they'll buy the two bags of mineral, dump it all out there. Yeah, and they'll eat it all in 5 minutes and then they'll be like, man, I'll never listen to that dude again. He don't know what he's talking about. You know? But if we did this every day, they'll eventually stop eating the mineral. So, yeah, it's one of those things of like you have to build your animals up to prevent this, because if they're eating the mineral, then they're obviously deficient on the mineral. All right. So
I like that. If you feed it like you're supposed to, it doesn't cost anything.
Yeah, right. So,
Hold on.
Yeah, kind of throw that.
We can stop here.
Yeah. Kind of like feeding your corn plant, you know?
Yeah.
You do it like you're supposed to. You get through, you know, the high yielding corn.
Yeah, you get a response. It's an investment.
Yeah, it's not an expense. Don't look at it as an expense. But, anyways, the mineral thing, having plenty of shade around for your cows, you know, it's going to get hot. And there's the Black Angus cow. In general, is what most people have around. You know, those things are substantial to sitting under trees, and you know, once they stand there so long, they manure and mess, and you know, it gets wet and soggy around there. Well, then you get foot rot, then you get a bad leg, then you got flies all around you. You know, that's something you got to watch out for. Fly control. fly control this time of year is super important, because the fly control prevents your paint, you know, the flies flying around their head get pink eye. Just a common annoyance. If you ever see a cow out in the field and she's constantly wagging her tail,
there's not a happy cow.
There's something wrong with her. Now, if you're on the feeder stalker side of things, where you've got these little calves out there in the field and they're wagging their tails and they're moving around all the time and jerking or doing something with their body, guess what? They're not gaining weight. They're using their energy to get the flies off of them. So, you know, there's little stuff like that. I would say just
for fly control, they used to have those rub bars and just the places where they go into the feeders to get the fly dope on them and stuff. They still have all that.
Yeah, they still do have that stuff, and there's still some people that use it. Honestly, most of it is now either on a in a mineral, you know, like I said earlier, that they get and it controls the flies. There's some actual dewormer things out there right now that control the eggs.
Yeah, it breaks the life cycle.
Yeah, breaks the life cycle of them. So there's many different ways out there that people are using
ear tags.
Yeah,
fly tags. Some people use the vet guns with a. It looked really similar to a paintball, and it, you know, breaks open that fly control on the
animal. Can you spray with drones? No, I didn't know.
Hey,
I'm just asking.
We can try. I mean, if you got a drone you want to try, we will definitely try. That ends up
making somebody $1 million. You are welcome.
Yeah, that could be the new thing right there.
It sounds like a good way to put the cows through the fence.
I would roughly guess that if you get outside of southern Indiana, they better have good fences because things are going to go through. Yeah.
They're probably used to it by now. I'm not going to say do it with a plane. You can do it with a small drone.
Yeah. But maybe that's the way you need to do it with a plane. You cover a wider area.
The helicopters.
You know? Yeah.
Power line high, just drop it in. Cows don't even know what hit them.
So. Yeah.
Yeah, I would say, too, just to add to what Ryan was saying as far as even transporting cattle this time of year, you know, not a lot of people think about that, but, you know, transporting more in the evening hours or early in the morning is really, really critical in what, you know, the business that we're in. You know, we keep our yards open pretty late the night before a sale just so people could transport in the evening. And cooler temperatures. A lot of guys that are hauling cattle out west, they haul overnight this time of year. So
just kind of common sense stuff.
Yep.
Yeah.
I mean, if it's not comfortable for us, it's not comfortable for
them. For sure.
Yep.
And even we were talking one time, and sometimes when you transport them, they have water right there when they come off the trailers where they just almost have to run into it.
Yep.
So they don't have to look for it or anything.
Yeah. Yeah. That's super important on this time of year. A lot of people pulling the fall calves off to weaning. You know, it's always, you know, everybody thinks, oh, we'll put the water in the middle of the pen. Well, that's I'm glad you have water in there, but they're not going to find it for a long time. So like, you want to put the water on the outside of the pen in a fence line. So that way, because the circular habit of a cow is to find the fence line and walk all the way around it. So if they find the water on the outside of the pen, they'll find it way faster than they'll find it in the middle of the pen.
That's a good takeaway for it.
Yeah.
That is, when you dump them out of a trailer, they're going to run around the outside. Doesn't matter if it's 40 acres or 2 acres. All right. Well, that's Ryan, that's about all I've got.
You don't want to talk about the high path avian influenza. So we've seen it in dairy cattle. So we've talked a lot about dairy cattle already. Yep. So any effects in the beef cattle, any other dairy news that's going on? I mean, clearly that's even showing up in some meat, but those animals were rejected prior to them even being cut for product.
Yep.
So, but it did show up in the tissue. So thoughts on that?
You know, the last, several weeks, I'll say probably six to eight weeks. We've dealt with this in our facilities. Not the HPAI, but just the whole, you know, sense of urgency about making sure that we have good, healthy cattle coming through our facilities. to be honest with you, it's kind of fallen off the radar now. A couple weeks ago, it really ramped up there for a little bit.
Back in April.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. You know, and it was kind of crazy because I was on a lot of calls with the USDA or, you know, our state vets, local vets. Our CEO, he's on a call still every day with the USDA integrated in that. But, you know, it became a sense of urgency when we started seeing multiple cases across the United States, is when it really hit home for us. Again, just making sure that we have the right paperwork filled out, that we're, you know, communicating with our vets.
Know where they came from.
Know where they came from. The traceability factor really comes into that, you know. You know, from the standpoint of dairy cattle in general, really the only rules that have been out there is for lactating dairy cattle, right?
And that makes sense with them being packed up inside, a lot of handling, a lot of contact, direct contact.
Direct contact. Yeah. You know, and as far as the colored cattle, beef cattle side of things, you know, we really haven't seen any influence of what's going on, you know, with HPAI involved in the beef, you know, the colored cattle, beef cattle side. You know, not saying that, you know, obviously if it's in one strand of cattle or breed of cattle, could be in the other, you know, but at the end of the day, it's really kind of died down as far as the publicity and what's going on. We're still, from our side, we still have protocols that we're following for the USDA real closely. Our producers have, you know, been real welcoming to that. It's an extra step, you know what I mean?
Oh, sure.
But checking temperature.
Yep, but at the end of the day, it's, you know, it's worth it, you know, for in the end, so.
And it has, you know, like I say, it's another factor that we throw into the equation. You know, sitting here, what, 5-6 years ago, we'd been talking about the mad cow disease. And,
oh, my.
And, you know,
yeah,
and
20
and
years ago,
it,
all of that.
Yeah, and so, like, we had the tuberculosis back a long time and, like, all this other stuff. So it's another factor we're going to throw in there, and I'm sure there's going to be, you know, more factors come along and hit us, you know, on both livestock production and you know, meat production as well. But, you know, it's something that we take very seriously at United Producers, I know for sure. And you know, we've, you know, on my end of it, on the lower end, I guess you might say, you know, we've had probably, I would say, 10 phone calls over this, and where Andy's in, he's on phone calls, you know, probably mostly every day. And our, like I said, our CEO, he's on a phone call every day and sometimes two times a day. Like I say, it's one of those things that, you know, I wouldn't say it's just another thing, but it's something that, you know, we take serious whenever it's anything. And, you know, trying to push out the same as I'm sure you guys do in the hog situation.
Absolutely.
Stuff like that.
Well, the consumer's got to feel good about it. Yeah,
sure.
Problem.
And it's one of those things that, you know, you don't want to blow it off and not talk about it. But at the same time, you want to, you know, reassure everybody that, you know, that everybody's here, you know, to try to promote livestock and promote the sale of it, the production of it, the, you know, and even on the meat side of it. And, you know, just reassure them that, you know, everybody local is trying to do everything we can do and everything. And, you know, and even up into the meat packers and stuff like that, you know, they're doing everything they can do. And it's something that, you know, they'll put a stop to it. They'll shut it down. They'll get it regulated where it needs to be. There'll be a few more hoops you got to jump through, the same as if you're spraying Roundup or anything like that. But, you know, just a few more things you got to go through, a few more steps here and there. But at the end of the day, you know, it really hasn't honestly affected the meat prices. It hasn't affected the meat, the sort, you know, people bringing in meat. We get a lot of questions about it, which is good. You know, like we want to answer those questions, because the people that don't know the answer to the question will still be hesitant to it. So,
sure.
You know, it goes back to the amount of care. I mean, these cattle are getting looked at a lot.
Right.
I mean, they're getting looked at before they get on the truck. They're getting looked at when they get put at your place. When they go across the country, they're getting looked at again. They're getting shots. They're getting
and even the actual truckers. We talked about loading them on semis a while ago. The truckers have to have a certification to haul our livestock, and I'm sure it's the same way on the hog side CQS, of it too. They have to have the trucker certification. So that means, you know, not all the responsibility is on the farmer or the agents like we are, or, you know, the trucker has to take some responsibility too. So if it's let's say, for example, we've been loading in the wintertime at, you know, 9 o'clock in the morning, you know, it's kind of that trucker's responsibility to say, hey, can we move this up to 6 o'clock? You know, so it kind of levers everything out.
Yeah.
And kind of gives everybody some responsibility instead of like that one guy made all this problem, you know? So, you know, like he has to, you know, even the trucks going down the road, you see the box trucks go down with the reefers on and stuff like that. Those guys are certified too to haul that meat. So, it's kind of cool that, you know, like the extra steps that the livestock industry has put into effect from, you know, like I say, the cow calf guy, the farrow to finish unit, whatever, you know, all the way through to where it hits your plate at Texas Roadhouse or wherever you're eating at or your dinner plate at your house, how many actual trainings and actual, you know, things that happen to that animal or how much care it gets, you know, from A to B.
To make sure you have a good product at
right,
the end.
Right.
All right.
That's good. That's all I got.
That's all I got. Well, thank you for joining us, Nandy. Welcome on the first time. So
thank you.
So we can't go this long because we saw what happened to prices when you were gone this long.
Yeah.
So
clearly. I don't know who's watching the store, but yeah, we'll have to have you back more regular.
Yep. All right. Well, that's another episode of The High Ground, powered by Premier Companies. And please like and subscribe.
All right. Thanks.
Thank you all.
Thanks, guys.